burger with a donut bun. What are those crazy potheads gonna come up with next? Go to the counter offer inside of Blender's Bar at 800 South Van Ness Avenue, San Francisco. It's located between 19th Street and 20th Street in the Mission District. Open 7 nights a week from 5 to 10 p.m. or later. Counter offer, son!
This is dog's
Subliminal SF brings you visual and auditory mind control. For the best graphic design, physical merchandise, and live music promotion, go to www.subliminalsf.com and check out their hilarious t-shirts and super cool bands at clubs and bars all over the Bay Area. Subliminal SF creates amazing flyers, posters, and design for every need. So go now to www.subliminalsf.com and experience what this wonderful local business has to offer.
Happy hour. What could be happier than 23 comics doing jokes for each other and at a radio listening audience? Puppets, kittens, unicorns, porn maybe? Oh, well, Stage Shine makes them happy, and this super happy comedy open mic is open every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. But you can also listen anytime by downloading the podcast at Mutiny Radio FM Index at
podcasts.pcrcollective.org.
So come live or listen later or to every happy hour mic Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. at Radio FL Mutiny Radio. I just fucked that up again. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah,
you got it. I got it. You got it. Look at that tragedy.
Billy Bob, you ever want to be funny?
Well, my dogs think I'm funny, Daryl.
Well, I mean, you ever want to be, like, in front of an audience? Like, other than, like, squirrels, dogs, and dead persons?
Oh, shoot. From time to time, I've given it a thought or two.
You know, if you go to Joke Workshop, there's more than two peoples paying attention to your jokes, and they ain't even gonna be jerks about it.
Daryl, are you serious? I can get people to listen to my jokes?
And they'll even say nice things to you before they tell you how to get improvements.
No way. What is this dag nabbit thing called?
It's Joke Workshop.
Joke Workshop?
Yep, every Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. on the Mutant Radius.
So you're saying I could tell my jokes every Monday from 6 to 8?
That's what I'm saying. It's the Joke Workshop Mondays, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Mutant Radius. Yahoo! You love me.
It's all right. When you put your- and inject politics into the physician-patient relationship. I'm stunned that this POS bill would get this far, and I'm ready to call for action. If I play first reality, unite women...
In your fields since the Occupy movement?
Well, I was arrested a second time, also as a journalist, on the one-year
anniversary.
Violin.
psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
You ever lie down on the couch?
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Brannigazoo, let's have it, you. I will not count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
How's it going, Trina?
Hey, Ed. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing all right.
Woo! Awesome. I am so happy to be here. It's a beautiful day. This is my favorite thing to do every week. And I'm super excited about the topic today because after our Immutables podcast last Sunday, and welcome everybody to the Immutables. I'm Trina Roderick, and I'm here with Ed Ant, who's running the board, the ones and twos.
Hello.
I thought Pam just called it the board, the ones and twos.
Okay, here's the thing about every time that she calls it the ones and twos.
What?
The ones and twos are actually those right there. And I'm pointing to the record players.
Well, I figured it had some sort of random reference, but I was listening to a song the other day. I don't remember what song it was. And it might have been either a lyric or, you know, how sometimes they kind of chatter before this. I think it was a lyric, somebody blah 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 on the ones and twos. And I was like, oh, Pam knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, except, like I said, the ones and twos are the LP players.
Well, I mean, I'm not too surprised that it's like a term from back when DJs were less technologically gifted.
technically they were more technologically gifted because here literally uses the ones and twos. No one.
Well, it's Pam just the turntables.
Yeah. It's just the turntables. That's the ones and twos.
Because nobody has the albums anymore.
I had a hard enough right over time. There.
Well, that's true. I had a hard enough time scrapping, putting together a CD. I couldn't. I'm actually kind of sad. Like, the first time I put together an iTunes library was when, anyway, now we are way off the subject. So, we're here today. I want to talk again about the duck face selfie photo because I got into
again
it
with bad selfies.
Well, you know, the more I think about it, the more that photo is the perfect. The perfect instigator for this conversation. And the photograph is perfect in just so many ways that
I can't... Remind me again what this conversation that we have yet to have is.
Well, okay. So like I said, I got into it with Steven Torres, and I want to talk about the conversation in several different respects. And first, I want to start out because it sort of devolved into us not quite hating each other. I wouldn't say hate, but it got as conversations online.
You're not going to make babies with him, is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I mean, it was never that. It was just that people have a tendency to get real ugly, really, really fast. I mean, that's just the way we communicate. Well, I shouldn't say that's just the way we communicate. That's a function of communicating with people that you never think you're going to see again, and you don't really have enough contact with them for these sort of slight social snubs to make a difference. So when I was an attorney, for example, I noticed that when I worked in dependency, which was a job that was regular courtroom work assigned to a regular courtroom with the same judge and the same other attorneys in the courtroom, the same DA every day, there was considerably more kindness and respect. I mean, we still argued. We still held our positions and held our ground and represented our clients. I mean, just because we were kind to each other off the record doesn't mean that we went on the record and,
were friendly.
You know, that didn't impact our job in any way. In fact, it made it, you know, easier and more pleasant, which is why you do it, you know, just because. And the thing is, with civil litigation, it's considerably different because you have one client in a case, you have like 40 clients. Like, so let's say, for example, you're a defense attorney and you're juggling 40 clients. You're maybe going to see those attorneys on the other side of those cases again. Maybe not. I mean, some of the bigger, more consistent firms you see can frequently and some you don't. And so in those situations, when you're up against an attorney and a firm you think you're never going to see again, I noticed that the attorneys tended generally to be nastier and get nastier more quickly because there's not quite the same sort of
because there's no relationship to
right.
grab at.
Well, and there's not only no relationship to grab at, but you're never going to see each other again. So people, it's easier
Hence,
to
no
get ugly. Right. Yeah. So it's hard for me not to think that that's sort of what's happening online. I mean, these are people that you don't have to see face to face. These are conversations you're not having face to face. And so it's easy to get ugly fast. What do you
think?
Yeah,
it's a lot easier to be detached when you don't have to be in front of somebody to tell them something. Yeah.
But it's more than just detached. I feel like it's the willingness to be, harsh in a way you might
that's
otherwise.
That's the thing. If you're detached from what you're saying, mm-hmm. you can be more malice without thinking about it. It's just how it works.
Yeah. Right.
Not that being detached is always a bad thing. It's just, it's part of it.
Yeah. It's just different. And I guess that's sort of how I think about, the way people speak to each other on the internet now. And I feel really compelled to continue to talk about the self-faced or the duck face selfie and hate in particular, because it's a really, really important concept to understand moving forward into the 21st century. I feel like we need to absolutely get away from the 1950s black and white thinking, whereby there was a good guy that dressed in white and was constant perfection. And in contrast to that, like I'm thinking of the 1950s Westerns, you have the bad guy dressed in black and is constantly the bad guy. And this is that thinking about people is just too simplistic, given the fact that we now interact globally with each other through the internet. We need to understand people with greater complexity. And I remember, for example, like the movies started to demonstrate more complexity, and definitely. Like, I remember the first time I saw Reservoir Dogs, for example, like the Quentin Tarantino films of the early 90s. For me, that was the big impact of Reservoir Dogs, was the fact that all of a sudden we were looking at the bad guy not with animosity, but we were sort of, it was this new sort of, not necessarily sympathetic approach, but behind the scenes approach that was necessarily humanizing, because, you know, people are people. So behind the scenes, the bad guys are going to argue amongst each other. The bad guys are going to, you know, the people are people. You know, we only think of people as good and bad in relation to ourselves or our group or our country or our set that we are identifying with at that moment in time. But the people on the other side are people too. Right? Let's get into that. So I broke down the reasons not to hate someone just because they express some form of ism, like racism or sexism, I think we need to be, let me get into it. So there's three separate reasons. One reason is that it's the best choice for yourself as a person. Another reason relates to her as a person. And then the third category is the reasons related to the world generally and where we're going. So let's start with the preface to Pedagogy of the Oppressed, because that's my jam. I so love Pedagogy of the Oppressed. I hate the word pedagogy. It basically means teaching kind of thing. I really freaking hate that word, though. I mean, it basically knows it.
It's a pretentious word.
It's totally annoying. I really freaking hate it. But it basically just means know what to do. We don't teaching somebody what to do. So a big part of the problem with overcoming oppression is we don't know how. Like, we don't know what to do to get there. What are the steps? There's nobody's going to lay out a plan. We have to figure it out for ourselves. So I'm going to read from, would you like to read from Pedagogy of the Oppressed?
Not particularly.
I'll read it if you want me to. It's only a couple sentences. You have a much better reading voice.
As we have.
All right, so I'm just going to read the first paragraph and the first sentence in the second paragraph.
So just to right there.
I have encountered both in training courses which analyze the role of conscientiao and actual experimentation with a truly liberating education, the fear of freedom, discussed in the first chapter of this book.
Okay, hold on to it for a second. Well, also read the footnote. So Fieri uses a word to describe he defines it in the footnote. How does he define, how do you spell it again? The Go ahead with the footnote, sorry.
C-O-N-S-C-I-E-N-T-I-Z-A-C-A-O.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce that. It's a
Nobody
word
does.
In Spanish.
It's made up.
Huh?
Nothing.
What? That's the problem I have with reading is that you don't ever have to verbalize it. And so you just recognize the word, but you never really... If you never verbalize it, it makes...
The term refers to learning to perceive social, political, and economic contradictions and to take action against the oppressive elements of reality.
Okay. So I feel like one of the things that happened with Stephen and I is that he
hates dead air.
Well, no, sorry. He hates anti-Semitism, which I understand. All right. So Stephen said, well, I posted it. My initial comment was, I love this photo, but I hate anti-Semitism more. This Sunday, Yuri will be on the podcast to discuss, and Allie will be our guest during the Just Me and Chicks with Ed Hour on Meet Me Radio. Steven Torres, who actually is an LA comic. He was here recently in San Francisco. I don't remember why. Maybe the festival? But I first remember seeing Steven perform at a place called The Spot in LA. So the Spot is like a coffee shop that basically does a joke workshop on Saturday afternoons, but because it's in LA, it's in the coffee shop is the size or the, they have this room in the back of the coffee shop that's basically the size of the Mutiny Radio, at least the portion with the audience and the stage. That's super, super hot every freaking... It's L.A., and it's in this really freaking hot box with basically a joke workshop that's actually pretty well attended. So Steven responded and said, this girl has level 10 anti-Semitic sentiment. I said, well, she also seems to be surrounded by level 10 anti-Muslim sentiment in an apparent contradiction. Shouldn't we discuss that? No. He says, I'm sorry. I just don't pay attention to people that say Hitler didn't hate the Jews because he didn't kill them all. And that was a heinous, heinous comment that she made. But I feel like what's happening with Stephen is this. It says... You know, we learn to perceive social, political, and economic contradictions and to take action against oppressive elements of reality. And that's something that we are very keen on doing in the 21st century, right? Stephen has recognized that, you know, he's good at perceiving social, political, and economic contradictions, and he's identified her and her anti-Semitism as one of those political, social contradictions. And he has taken his strategy is to take action by what he says is, I don't pay attention to people that blah, 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 blah. So his response is, well, we're going to respond by not paying attention to them. Well, that I feel like speaks to her, and part of the reason we shouldn't hate her is because not paying attention to her is not going to solve the problem. And to the extent that it's true that if you're either part of the problem or part of the solution, and if you just turn a blind eye to... Like, if that's the strategy we just ignore, then it's not going to be, there's no way we are going to bring her to a better place. We're never going to be able to educate her out of her anti-Semitism. We're making the false assumption that she, or potentially could be making the false assumption that she can't change or doesn't want to change. And I don't think that's true. I think it is possible for her to learn and grow. And I certainly don't want to make the assumption that it's not possible. And if it is possible, then I know hating her is going to make it impossible. There's no way she's ever going to listen to someone that hates her, even if their reason for hating her is justified, because there are good parts of her too. And if at some point in the future she comes to the place where she understands that she was wrong, then she's going to be in a better place. But why would she ever hate, or why would she ever accept someone who hated her while she was wrong? Does that make any sense? Like, why would she ever... Right, like when somebody hates you, it closes dialogue. It makes it impossible to reach a better place with them. So in chapter 2, for example, Fieri says, dialogue cannot exist without humanity. The naming of the world through which men constantly recreate the world cannot be an act of arrogance. Right? Dialogue as an encounter of men addressed to the common task of learning and acting is broken off if the parties or one of them lacks humility, right? Like, if somebody hates you, why would you talk to them?
Good question.
You wouldn't want to, right? No, most people don't. I mean, most people respond in kind in relationships. If you hate them, they are gonna hate you back. That's a generally reasonably expected, I think, response.
Except in the case of crazy stalkers. You know, that's one-sided love, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's what I mean by general. And of course, there's always the exceptions.
Like your parents.
Yeah.
How could they ever really love you if they know that you're just going to go away? How, Trina? How? Don't answer that.
Parents is a complex. That's a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
I want to get into parents' can of worms. I can do that at the end. But I also brought a book by Zunzi, which is an ancient Chinese philosopher. And I want to rename the word that Fieri uses and frame the way he says, you know, he wants to create a term and does create a term for learning to perceive social, political, and economic contradiction and to take action against the oppressive elements of reality. I absolutely think we should do that. And I agree that we should all continue to attempt to learn to perceive the social and political contradictions and to take action against those oppressive elements. My disagreement with Stephen and my disagreement with generally hating haters is that hating them is not an action against that type of oppression that's going to work. It's going to be counterproductive. And I know that's counterintuitive because we need that emotion of hate. And it comes from it doesn't come from the thinking part of the brain. I think it comes from the part of the brain that's either mammalian or limbic, in that it's a very good warning for us. You know, it's clearly being anti-Semitic is dangerous and bad, and it's important for us to believe that and feel that way, but it's also important for us not to dwell on the hate overly, right? Like, if that's all we do, if we allow the hate to consume us and we don't put that hate in check, that's also going to overtake us, and we're going to then be out of balance. So I'm not suggesting we get rid of hate altogether. I'm not suggesting that we don't ever hate anybody or we don't ever pay attention to that emotion when it comes up for us. What I'm saying is that we recognize it and acknowledge it, and then we can also rationally understand that we need to be careful and to take appropriate action against that particular oppressive element. And I'm suggesting that hate is not appropriate for a myriad of reasons that we're going through today. But one of those reasons is that it's bad for us individually to spend that much time dwelling on a destructive emotion. It's like eating too much junk food. And again, I'm not suggesting that we never feel that feeling. I'm suggesting we put it in its proper place, give it a proper balance and contextualization. In Shunji, and when I actually, the first time I taught this, I disagreed with this with my students. X-U-N-Z-I, I'm reading from Basic Writings, which was translated by Burton Watson. Man's nature is evil. Goodness is the result of conscious activity. The nature of man is such that he is born with a fondness for profit. If he indulges this fondness, it will lead him into wrangling and strife, and all sense of courtesy and humility will disappear. He is born with feelings of envy and hate, and if he indulges in these, they will lead him into violence and crime, and all sense of loyalty and good faith will disappear. So for our own personal well-being, it's important to keep that hate in check. And the reason it's important, in addition to the reason, I mean, just the effectiveness of it, if we overindulge in it, and if you want to just generally be a successful person, I would strongly recommend not overindulging in hate. I agree with Shunji on that point. And part of the reason for that is that if you take a group and you believe that, like she's done. I mean, what's wrong with her anti-Semitism is that she hates an entire group. I don't know the reasons for her hating an entire group, but certainly there are probably some members within that group, like every group, that are deserving of her hate and others are not. And it's unfair and unjust. And just plain ignorant, obviously, to hate an entire group of people based on something like race. So she's taken a set of people and hated both the good and the bad in that set. And what'll happen if you apply the Shunji conscious activity and you work on tempering that hate and replacing those feelings of hate with positive emotions like love or gratitude. And again, I'm not saying never register hate. I'm just saying pull it back significantly. Then you will apply that same philosophy to the thoughts that you have about yourself. Because generally what people tend to do, and I would bet Stephen falls into this category based on my experience meeting him, is that we ourselves also engage in self-talk and self-hate, that if we apply that sort of checking and balancing to other people, then that will automatically apply that same balancing and checking to our own self-talk, and we'll become happier, more balanced people personally. So it's an amazing trick. All you have to do is just not hate on other people, put that in balance and you won't hate on yourself, which then has this miraculous effect of making you a more successful person. Okay. So let me talk about then transitioning on to one of the reasons not to hate her is that what effect does hating her have on her? For us anyway. Like maybe if I was her next door neighbor, that might make a difference. But I live in a completely different country. She doesn't even know Stephen and I had this conversation. She doesn't know how I'm having this conversation now. She doesn't know Stephen hates her. He's engaging in a destructive emotion or an overindulging in a destructive and it doesn't even destroy her. It only destroys him. Right? And I can understand why hate is super, super dangerous. Like, none of us want to be on that slippery slope, right? Obviously, in the 20th century, we know that anti-Semitism is dangerously close to leading to the genocide that we saw in World War II. And nobody wants that. We need to guard against that. And again, that's why it's okay to register the emotion of hate. We just need to pull it back and temper it. And I want to know, like, why? Like, what does it do for her, right? Like, how it doesn't impact her at all. So to the extent that she doesn't even know she's being hated is yet another reason it's not going to be effective in making a difference. And what's the essence?
I could have sworn that she took that duck face selfie in front of anti-Islamists because they hated her.
Well, you know what? Right. Right. Wait, but that's what I'm saying. Like, what does us hating her do? Like, we don't hate her. I mean, we or Stephen hating her. Like,
the point is she sought out a group of people that hated her, got in front of them, and did a duck face selfie just to put a cherry on top of douchebaggery.
What do you mean, just to put a cherry on top of douchebaggery?
Do you go around looking for black supremacist groups that actively hate white people? And
well, how do you know? I mean, so you're saying, like, she wasn't.
I'm saying that those people carried signs.
Yeah.
That were anti-Muslim.
Right.
You know, there's unless if she didn't know how to read,
you wouldn't want to respond to, like, if there were signs. Okay, I mean, you wouldn't.
Let me put it this way: if there was a Klan rally marching down that street over there,
right,
I would not be going towards them.
But there are lots of people in San Francisco who would.
There are a lot of crazy people in San Francisco, Trina.
They're not all crazy.
A lot of them are. Yeah.
Okay, but what's your point?
My point is, she did it for attention, and now we've been talking about it for 2 weeks when I was bored after the first one.
I don't know what to tell you. You don't have to be here. I'm sorry that this is boring. It's just so important. And, you know, the photo I posted is not her selfie. I did not post her selfie. You understand that, right? The photo that went around is not her selfie.
She was in it, though, right?
Yeah, somebody else took the photo. They took a photo of her taking a selfie. It's not her selfie. They took a photo of her taking a selfie. It's not her photo.
That only makes it twice as stupid.
Not at all.
No. Taking a selfie in front of people that hate you. And then doing the duck face.
Why is that bad?
Just seems a little weird.
I mean, why? Why would it be bad to challenge in that way an anti-Muslim group or anti-anything group?
Because if they're anti you and you're small and frail, doesn't sound like that great of an idea to be in front of them.
So it's basically dangerous for her.
Yeah. She was basically taunting them into doing violent acts.
She wasn't. No, I don't think that's a fair representation of what she was doing.
Taking a duck face selfie in front of an anti-Islamic group as an Islamic lady
is not a taunt to violence, no. I don't think that would be legally considered a violent taunt.
Yeah, I'm not sure what is considered a legal taunt.
Well, you know, I've read some cases about it. I've taken some courses. It's been a long, long time. But I think that, like, the legal phrase is inciting a riot. Obviously, she's not trying to incite a riot, but I don't know. You think she wasn't trying to incite a riot or just violence?
I don't think you know what duck face is meant to do. I mean, think about it. The only people that do duck face photos are ladies trying to look beautiful, right? Am I right?
No, that's selfies. Like pouty face.
Yeah, pouty face is duck face.
No, duck face is like, no, it's not kissy.
It's totally kissy.
It is not.
Look it up.
I've seen the photo. I've looked at it a gazillion times. She's not doing a kissy face.
Yeah, because it's called duck face when you do it for a selfie alone. Think about it, Trina.
So she's kissing herself. So she's doing a kissy face to herself, and you think that is aimed at inciting riot or violence?
The technical term is duck face, and nobody likes duck face.
Okay, I get you, but you've explained that a duck face is what, like a kissy face? And you think a kissy face at herself
is... I feel you're playing word games. And I just...
You know, what you're
that.
Telling me doesn't... I'm trying to make sense of what you're telling me. And what you're telling me is it's a kissy face, no?
Duck face.
Okay, so... Duck face is not a fuck you face?
I think any time that you get in front of people that hate you and you're trying to do a fuck you face... You're kind of tempting fate there. You know, am I wrong?
I think so. It depends on the circumstances. I mean, if they've got sticks raised, but she didn't look very close to them. She looked like she was a safe distance. I mean, they don't have guns or any weapons that I see.
Yeah.
It doesn't look to me like she's inciting. It depends on how many other people are around her. I mean, if she's alone.
Since when do mobs need weapons to be violent, Trina? Since when?
Okay, but we're talking about why not to hate her. And I don't think that her decision to put herself in danger is a good enough reason to hate her and to engage in that destructive emotion that's counter to our own well-being. It doesn't seem to me to be worth sacrificing our own well-being to hate her. No matter what she, I mean, based, no matter how, I mean, we're going to have to, I'm going to have to hear something kind of way out there to think that it would be worth that destructive emotion. Even then, I think it would be unlikely. I mean, because what is her ignorance? Her ignorance is that she's making false assumptions about Jewish people, I would assume, right? That's part of it. False negative assumptions. I don't feel like I've satisfied you with my answer.
No.
We're just... I feel like you're prejudiced against her because she's anti-Semitic.
No, I'm prejudiced against her because she's taking duck face selfies.
So it's everybody who takes duck face selfies, or...?
More like everybody who takes dumb pictures in dumb places. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, if somebody took a duck face selfie in front of an active volcano, I wouldn't want to listen to stories about them either.
Well, the thing is, I feel like we need to help people understand how to take action against oppression. And so you're suggesting that taking a duck face selfie at anti-you protest is not the appropriate action. So what action would you suggest that's appropriate under those circumstances?
I don't know. Maybe not trying to interact with them in a way that makes you come off as A, superior to them, B, like you don't really give a shit about them at all when they're a group that's opposed to you.
Everyone was arguing with me about. I felt like everyone was like, you know, basically,
I think
that's what we're supposed to do to her.
I feel that
right?
You keep trying to frame the story like she's a hero or a champion when she's just somebody who took a shitty selfie.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the hero or champion issue. I don't think she's a hero. I think she is an anti-Semite who's dealing with anti-Muslim protesters, is what I think. And I think she's...
Do you spend 2 weeks talking about an anti-hero?
Oh, we're going to spend a lot more time than 2 weeks. I wouldn't come next week if you don't want to talk about this with me again. So, here's the thing. She is... We don't know anything about her. We're making lots of assumptions about her by hating her. We don't know why she hates Jewish people. I'm not suggesting there's ever a okay reason, but if so, let's say, for example, she was gang raped by Jewish men. How would you feel about her then? How would you feel about her hate and her actions if you found out that that was true about her?
I would feel that I've spent way too much time figuring things out about her.
Okay, well, if you hadn't spent any time trying to figure things out about her and you had just found out, if you found out she was, that was true, just like you found out that she was an anti-Semite, how would that change your opinion of her?
I feel you're missing the point. I don't really want to think about this person any longer.
Okay, then how about I just talk and do what I've prepared?
Yeah, all right, let me stop stopping you then.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind engaging with you, but I'm going to argue with you. Whatever you tell me, I'm going to argue it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm an attorney. That's what I'm here to do, is argue.
I'm going to go take a leak.
Okay. So I think it's important for us to be careful about making assumptions about other people. I mean, if we choose to hate her because she hates other people, without knowing why she hates other people, I feel like we might be making a mistake in our assumptions about her, just like we think she's making a mistake about her assumptions about Jewish people. So again, I'm not suggesting that what we do is that we accept her anti-Semitism. Not at all. We hate her anti-Semitism. We just don't hate her. We keep her anti-Semitism in check. And we are careful not to hate the good with the bad. And again, when I think that what we do is we use her dilemma. So we don't even have to assume that she is dealing with the same sort of anti-Muslim sentiment that she employs herself. So how do we know then that she wasn't so influenced by this philosophy? Let's go back to Fieri. One of the basic elements of the relationship between the oppressor and oppressed is prescription. Every prescription represents the imposition of one man's choice upon another, transforming the consciousness of the man prescribed into one that conforms with the prescriber's consciousness. Thus, the behavior of the oppressed is a prescribed behavior, following as it does the guidelines of the oppressor. So at this point, what we know about her oppressor, to the extent that we are aware that she is dealing with anti-Muslim oppression, we know that her oppressor is employing this common anti-your group logic, whereby our group is all good and your group is all bad. And so she's resisting that. She's saying, no, my group isn't all bad. You're not seeing the good in our group. I'm very well aware of the good in our group and probably turning a blind eye to the bad. And so if we are dealing, she's saying to herself, you know, at least at a minimum, if we employ the logic of one group all good, one group all bad, then my group, Muslims, are not the group that's all bad. And if we only see things as black and white in that way, and my group is not all bad because it's at least partially good, if not all good, then you're the group that's all bad. I mean, it's the logic is the logic. And so we have to get away from the logic, get away from the principle, and understand that no one person and no one group is all either good or bad. But we can understand that she is potentially, at a minimum, trapped in that logic. I'm going to read from Vietti again. To surmount the situation of oppression, men must first critically recognize its causes so that through transforming action they can create a new situation, one which makes possible the pursuit of a fuller humanity. And that is actually not at all what I wanted to read. Sorry, took it to the wrong place. I mean, we can talk about that. I mean, that's a great sentence. But she has to recognize the causes of oppression. And I'm suggesting that one of the causes of oppression is this binary thinking whereby one group is all bad and one group is all good. Right? So one of the things that we have to get rid of is the cause. And if to the extent that that's a cause, if us hating her and all of her, just like she hates the Jews and all of the Jews, it's the same logic. It's just a different set. It's either a set of people or a set of cells. It's still a set. And we're not going to hate the entire set if there's good and bad mixed in with the set. And obviously, if there's all bad in the set, also not worthy of hate. But the point is that it's really, really common in struggling to overcome oppression. And if she's taking a duck face selfie at an anti-Muslim rally, she's obviously struggling to overcome oppression. So it's common for oppressors to, the oppressed, as they work through their oppression, to become what Fieri calls sub-oppressors. But almost always during the initial stage, but almost always during the initial stage of the struggle, the oppressed, instead of striving for liberation, tend themselves to become oppressors or sub-oppressors. The very structure of their thought has been conditioned by the contradictions of the concrete existential situation by which they are shaped. So she is shaped by an contradiction of concrete her concrete existential situation, which is anti-group. So she's struggling to overcome the oppression imposed upon her group. And in doing that, she's becoming a sub-oppressor. She's becoming her own oppressor of a different group. Her group is oppressed, and so she's reacting to that by oppressing another group, and that is not the appropriate reaction to oppression. So first, going back to conscious activity, learning to perceive the social, political, and economic contradictions and to take action against the oppressive elements of reality, it's important for us to get those actions right. And it's difficult for us to get those actions right because we don't know what actions to take. That's the whole problem. We don't know what to do. What do we do? Nobody knows. That's the problem. There is no pedagogy. There is no A, first A, then B, then C. So, I feel, let's see. Also, if you're hating, let's see. Hate Meditating is an attempt, usually, to take action. It's our body's knee-jerk response to oppression. But it's, again, not the action that is going to be effective. The only thing that's going to be effective is an act of love. So I'm going to turn to Fieri again and read from Fieri. The oppressor is in solidarity with the oppressed only when he stops regarding the oppressed as an abstract category and sees them as persons who have been unjustly dealt with, deprived of their voice, cheated in their sale of labor. When he stops making pious, sentimental, and individualistic gestures and risks an act of love. True solidarity is found only in the plentitude of this act of love. In its existentiality, it is a praxis. To affirm that men are persons and as persons should be free and yet do nothing tangible to make this affirmation a reality is a farce. So, in other words, sitting home and doing nothing is a farce if you want to spout out that men are persons and as persons should be free. So at least she's attempting to do something. I'm not suggesting that her attempt isn't flawed. And instead, we're going to be reading in chapter 2 of Fieri that what we have to do is expect these actions to be flawed. There, because there is no pedagogy, because we don't know what to do, we are going to stumble and fall, and we need to expect that. We absolutely cannot expect to always get it right and to get it right the first time. We are not computers. The opposite of hate is not a concert, it can't be an act in concert with oppression. So to the extent that oppression and hate are really commonly associated, I mean, hate really quickly leads to oppression. So we have to be careful that we also, in that hate, do not become sub-oppressors. I feel like it seems so clear that anti-Semitism is wrong and that we shouldn't support anti-Semitism. And of course, that's absolutely true. But that type of hate, that level 10 hate, is in concert. It's consistent with oppression. Oppressors are hateful. So we need to be careful and particularly suspect of action that is taken that's in concert, consistent with oppression. So why not take action as it relates to her rather than by ignoring her? By trying to educate her. I mean, it might not work, but at least it's an action that has a chance. Ignoring her has no chance. Hating her has even less chance. And also, how do we know that the act itself, like, how do we know that as she makes these attempts to challenge the oppression that she is struggling with, how do we know that that in and of itself will not educate her out of her anti-Semitism? Right? Like, as she engages in becoming a more fully conscious person through challenging oppression, she very well may come to the conclusion on her own that anti-Semitism is bad. I mean, getting back to my question posed to Ed earlier, we don't know.